taken out as well. My troops were green, and they were more than a little freaked out by this point. They'd chopped down their friends, the looming insectal enemy, and damned well anything else that got between the muzzles of their guns and the clinging darkness of the passage. It was all over in less than a minute. Cooper and Sarah had rushed back to us by that time. They examined the carnage with us. "What's your read, Veteran Mahler?" I asked. The squat woman was crouched over the bodies.
"They're all gone, sir. 6 lights and 4 Vulbites. We got off easy."
"Yeah," I said, nodding. "The enemy have drained their numbers from this region, clearly. They must be defending other regions in force." I reported to Graves, and he was oddly jazzed about the news.
"Only 4 of them. That's all you've seen?"
"That's it, sir, plus the wounded bug that came off the ceiling."
"He hardly counts. This is excellent. I'd expected light resistance, but this barely qualifies. I'm going to accelerate our time schedule."
"Sir?"
"Move faster, adjunct. Stop checking every hatch. Run to the next level up, and then the one after that. Push hard. Let's regain the territory we lost a few days ago."
A circle of eyes looked at me. I didn't want to have to reward their bravery with a suicidal set of commands, but that was enough to me.
"You're not losing your nerve, are you, adjunct?"
Graves demanded, sensing my hesitation. "No, sir. We're on it. McGill out." The platoon didn't make a sound. They all stared at me, hungry to learn their fates. "Why the hell is everyone looking at me?" I demanded. "Mahler!" She cracked 2 recruits in the back of the head. One of them was Cooper. She didn't like him any more than anyone else in authority did. The spell was broken, and my people were scanning for the enemy again. "Okay," I said. "Graves ordered us to move ahead. We're going to pick up the pace. No pausing to check doors and passages. Just run right past."
Carlos said. "Excuse me, adjunct. Could you just shoot me right now?"
Carlos was a smartass in the best of times. Worse, his jokes and complaints were contagious. I could see Cooper was already smiling and opening his mouth to make a similar remark. But he never got the chance. Spinning around to face Carlos, I unleashed a shower of snap rifle rounds. Purposefully, I aimed high, drawing a sparking line of bullets in an arc across the roof of the passage and ending that spray very close to his left ear. Carlos showed me big round eyes behind his faceplate. He didn't move, as he could tell from long experience. I was in a killing mood. "A suicide squad doesn't need a bio," I told him. "And I don't need any grief coming out of you either."
"I get it," he said. "Sorry, adjunct."
Cooper's comments, whatever they might have been, had died in his throat. His face was tight with fear all over again. "Good," I said. "Platoon advance, double time." We ran off into the darkness without a glance back. Chapter 34. We pushed them back all the way to the outer hatches. I, for one, could hardly believe it. We'd taken days to lose that same terrain, and now we'd won it back. We weren't the only ones who'd noticed. Graves had called up the entire cohort, pushing hard on every front. We'd posted troops along the way so we could legitimately claim control of several new levels and kilometers of territory in between. I poked a few buzzers out of the hatch in the roof, examining the exterior hull. It was a wasteland. We'd come here seeing a vast expanse of unfinished metal. Now it was scorched and pitted for as far as the eye could see.
"McGill,"
Graves called me as I examined the scene remotely.
"Yes, Primus."
"Are you still moving forward?"
"Negative, sir. We've reached the outer hull. Unless you want my lights to try to capture that, we've come to the end of the line."
He chuckled. That was a rare thing.
"That's excellent. We're filling in behind you. The Vulbites have abandoned this region. They must have stretched themselves too thin by trying to take..."
Right then, Keevy rushed to my side. She pushed her portable screen into my face. I frowned, looking at what she was trying to show me. It was a view of the outside. In the lower foreground, I saw a dozen kilometers of gently curving space factory. Up high, from our point of view, was the disk of the planet.
It was night there now, and it looked even darker and murkier than usual. But none of that was too interesting. What was important was a silver disk, a broad, flat disk, that was moving up from the planet to the space factory inside that very long umbilical tube. I said, Primus Graves?
What is it, McGill?
I'm forwarding you my tapper feed. Graves watched the buzzer input, and he began cursing.
Damn it. They're sending up more reinforcements. This is very disappointing. Just how big of a garrison did Rigel leave out here on this shadowy, godforsaken rock?
I don't know, sir, I admitted. But at least this shows that we're hurting them.
They'll drive us back. They'll outnumber us again, even with two full legions. We've got revival machines and reinforcements, but this war keeps escalating.
What are my orders, Primus?
Hold your position. I'll get back to you.
Something like 3 minutes went by. We watched the umbilical disgorge more troops onto the space factory, then the disc platform rolled back down the long rippling tube again. I had no doubt it would soon bring yet another fresh load of troops up to join the fun. It was depressing to watch. Finally, Graves came back online. His voice sounded defeated.
I couldn't talk them into it, he said. We'll never finish this if we don't sever that reinforcement line. They'll keep coming, sending as many as they need to defeat us. Eventually a fleet of starships will show up and finish us.
What about our own fleet, sir? I asked.
That's classified, McGill.
I laughed with a hint of bitterness. Classified? Who am I going to tell?
That doesn't matter. The disposition of our fleet is always classified.
His words made me think. In fact, I realized after a few seconds what he was hinting at, whether he'd meant to or not. There was no way Earth could hold Dark World without having a serious fleet stationed here. We were an advanced ground force, a rapid deployment formation making a surprise attack. But once we took Dark World, assuming we could even accomplish that much, the enemy could always send a serious fleet to smash us all to dust. The only counter to that was the deployment of Earth's fleet to this location. Drusus had said that was the long-term plan to establish a base out here to build ships and control the region. But how much of our existing fleet should Drusus send? All of it? That would leave Earth defenseless. That was the terrifying calculus of interstellar war. We really didn't know how many ships the enemy had, and they didn't know what we had either. We lived in haunting uncertainty about these simple facts. Launching an all-out assault might end the war, but it was insanely risky. The enemy could then send out a relatively small task force, catch you unprepared, and wipe out your home world. The stakes had never been higher. Humanity hung in the balance. We had to take territory, but to do so, we had to risk losing our entire species. It was at times like these that I was glad I was carrying a rifle around. When I screwed up, a few extra people came out of a revival machine. In comparison, it was no big deal. Primus Graves, I said suddenly. He paused as I'd interrupted him. He'd been giving me a list of captured decks, body counts, and the like. That stuff always bored me, so I hadn't bothered to listen.
What is it, McGill?
What if I could take care of this problem we share? Graves was quiet for a second. He knew what I was suggesting. He knew me better than most.
This is big, McGill. Everyone would know.
It could be sort of an accident, Graves snorted.
No one would buy it. Turov, Deitch, they would all want you permed.
Yeah, but do you think we could win the battle if I did it?
Of course. Right now, we've got a direct line to Earth, but they have a direct line to the planet. If one of us loses the source of reinforcements, it will break the cycle and give the victory to the other side.
Why can't Deitch see that?
Because it's not in her orders. She's not here to perform tactical miracles or make real strategic decisions. She's here to
advance her career?
I wasn't going to put it that way, but...
All right, sir, I said. We'll scout the area.
Scout? Just scout?
Are you sure you want details, Primus? He was quiet for a while.
No, he said at last. I guess I don't. Graves out.
After he was off the line, I signaled my light troops. They gathered around, and we huddled up. "All right," I said. "Time to say goodbye to your gonads. We're going up and over."
"Out there?"
Carlos squawked. "That's right." Cooper threw his rifle down, fuming. "What's wrong with you?" I asked, waving back veteran Mahler, who'd been about to kick his ass.
"We had a deal," he said. "Now it's all blown."
I thought about that. I said that if we finished our mission parameters, Cooper would get rank. This push out onto the hull was icing on a shit cake, and he didn't want to eat it. "You're right," I said. "Our deal stands. You got both of us this far, so the deal's good." Cooper stared at me, blinking for a second. Slowly, he began to smile.
"That's great, sir."
"Now," I said, "pick up your weapon before I have veteran Mahler shove it up your ass and stomp on your dick." To emphasize this threat, Mahler made a stomping motion with her right boot.
"Yes, sir,"
Cooper said, grabbing up his snap rifle and checking it. "No damage, sir. All indicators in the green."
"That's lucky for you, Splat," Mahler said.
"Okay," I said, looking around the group. "The buzzers show that the umbilical carried its load right into the station. They still control the loading bays. We're going to advance over the hull itself, using any cover we can find, and scout our way to the umbilical."
"The umbilical?"
Carlos demanded.
"Weren't we there already?"
"Yeah," I admitted. "But we failed that time. This time, we're doing it."
Carlos grinned. "Promise I get to die?"
"If you don't, I'll shoot you myself to make sure."
"You're such a tease, sir," he said.
Then he turned to the recruits. Most of them were looking bewildered and shocked.
"You see this shit right here?" he asked them. "This is what I've been talking about. This is the James McGill I've known for decades. The magic man I've been telling you kiddies about. You're all going to die soon. Be confident about that. And maybe you'll even go to prison afterward for a while. But you'll get to see something cool. Something so cool that it'll almost make everything worthwhile. In fact, today's scheme reminds me of Tech World, which they now call Trash World, by the way, because of this man's..."
I signaled Mahler, who stood up and approached Carlos. Her long arms reached for him. Carlos shut up in a hurry, but it wasn't good enough. It's hard to stomp on a man's dick when he's wearing a spacesuit, but I had to hand it to Mahler. She did her damnedest. Chapter 35. The battle proceeded at an alarming rate. The Volbites, shocked by the heavy losses and over-doubled strength in our numbers, had been pushed back. They were collapsing, but they'd wisely decided the one region they couldn't afford to lose was the area directly surrounding the umbilical loading bays. Like a gigantic elevator lobby, the decks around the base of the umbilical were dedicated to cargo transfer. Large chambers, warehouses, loading equipment, and even robotic transport systems dominated the area. This zone had become a beachhead for the invading Volbites. The human troops, thousands of them, were now pressing in from all sides, trying to drive the Volbites back toward the umbilical connection point. With time and perseverance, our commanders hoped to push them off the space complex entirely. Another load of reinforcing enemy troops was already on the way up, however. We could see them riding their silver disc at a pace of something like 100 kilometers an hour up toward the base of the space factory. We opened a hatch, and Cooper sprang out of it like a gopher in heat. The strategic situation was laid out in easy sight. We sent up buzzers, too, but human intel was always better.
"Sir," Cooper said, "they've got a full load on the elevator. It's about 2/3 of the way up."
"I see it. Have you got any company on the roof?
A few guards and spotters, maybe. No concentrated force in sight.
But they might be stealthed."
"I'm no wizard, sir. I see what I can see."
"Roger that. Take cover, keep spying, and stay low." Taking a minute to huddle with Keevy, we examined the data.
"I don't see a large force," Keevy said. "They might have troops out there lurking around with stealth suits, but I doubt it. The battle to defend the umbilical station is too critical."
"Agreed," I said. "Okay, people, good news. The mission is a go." They all looked sick. Slamming my gauntlets together, I grinned at them. "This is it. This is what we get paid for. We're going up and over the top. Today I don't want to see any lollygagging. Nobody holds back. We'll make a fast charge to the base of the...
Sir! Cooper called to me.
I'm seeing something.
Talk, Cooper.
Looks like exhaust plumes. A lot of them coming up the gravity well from the planet.
Exhaust plumes?
I signaled Keevy urgently. She worked her equipment, and she soon fed me imagery.
We've got assault shuttles inbound, I said, examining the evidence.
My heart sank as I said these words. The Vulbites were pulling out all the stops. They were in trouble on the station, and they knew it. They'd decided to send up another wave of troops using ships.
Report it to Graves, I told Keevy.
I already did, she said. Command says they know.
Everybody looked at me. Again, the enemy was escalating. Thousands more Vulbites would soon be crawling over the roof of the space factory. We had maybe 15 minutes to go before we were up to our asses in Vulbites.
It's go time, I said. We'll never get another chance.
Our whole op was better planned for this attack. At least, that's what I kept telling myself. This time, we didn't climb out onto the external hull kilometers from the umbilical. Instead, we'd chosen a spot that was as close as we could get without running into our lines, or theirs. When a pack of light troopers really decides to run, they can move pretty fast. We were in low grav, which allowed us to bounce around like rabbits. The scene was surreal. I've been involved in many infantry scrambles and charges under fire, but I've never done so while in orbit with a strange planet looming overhead. We were breathing hard, rushing for all we were worth. Maybe at some level we knew what was about to happen. Off to my right, there was a flash of brilliance. A whole layer of the outer metal of the orbital platform's hull vaporized. Gases expanded in a gush, then thinned out into an ashy cloud. Three names among my platoon members went red in that single instant. All of them struck dead.
Laser fire! I shouted. Spread out!
My remaining troops bounded away from each other, and some sought cover. We slowed down, which I knew was a mistake. It was only natural to try to save yourself. Rushing from one scrap of scorched metal to another, we kept advancing on the umbilical. It was close now, and it was shivering as the next transport disk was coming up from the planet. Somehow, some way, command got wind of what we were doing. Maybe it was only a matter of noticing our transponders were outside the main hull. No one else was in the area.
"Who's commanding those troops on the outer hull?" a voice demanded.
I knew that voice and that imperious tone. It was Deitch. After half a second indecision, I decided to put her on mute. In my book, it was far better to ask for forgiveness later than permission now, although knowing Deitch, I wasn't likely to get either one out of her. A few precious moments passed. The laser struck again behind us and to my right this time. No names went red. A clean miss. There were only a few hundred meters left now to cross, and my troops had resorted to rushing from one half-assed scrap of shelter to the next. Everyone tried to keep a shoulder against some protrusion as much as possible, hoping it would save them from the ground-based lasers.
"Troops!" I shouted on tactical chat.
I want you all to spring up and rush. That cannon has a cool-down cycle. If we run all out now, it won't have time to nail us again before we get into the shadow of the umbilical. Then if they do try to take us out, they'll be doing our demolitions work for us. Now go!
I sprang up and I saw several others follow out of the corner of my eye. Some hesitated, but most of them overcame their fear and raced after me. Another beam flashed, close this time. It ate the troops I'd left behind. I was down to a squad, no more. But we'd made it. We hugged the shadowy base of the umbilical away from the laser cannon. We were all panting in our suits. I could hear the O2 hiss in my ears. Watching my gauges flutter, I tried to figure out how much air I had left while the readings fluctuated wildly by the second.
"Keevy!" I shouted. "The weaponeers are gone. Fix me up some charges. We're disconnecting this giant vacuum hose in the next 90 seconds.
Cooper came close and threw his shoulder against the umbilical. He used proximity chat so that only I could hear him.
"You're so full of shit, sir," he said, gasping for air.
"That crap about a cool-down cycle?"
"That's right," I said.
"But it got everyone's ass out of cover and running, didn't it? Take a look back, Cooper. Check out your friends who froze like frightened mice."
Cooper did, and he blinked at the drifting, flash-roasted corpses. Finally, he nodded.
"You played it right. Again," he said. "I don't have your kind of brains. I don't think I could ever do your job."
I clanked a gauntlet down on his shoulder. "It's not some innate ability. It's experience. Don't sell yourself short. You're a kid. I'm older than your daddy, maybe your granddaddy, too, even if I don't look like it. Who knows what you'll be capable of if you make it to my age without being permed?" Cooper nodded, but he didn't look overly comforted.
"McGill!"
Keevy called after me. "Keevy, you got those charges set yet?"
"Not yet, but I'm getting nasty calls from Deitch. She knows it's you. She demands to be transferred to you directly."
I closed my eyes. Damn it, we were so close. "Imperata," I asked, tapping on her name. "To what do I owe this honor, sir?"
"McGill, you are a rogue element. If you don't obey me right now, I'm going to put you down."
Hearing those words, I craned up my neck and helmet. I could see Nostrum hanging in space. Deitch had moved the ship, and I was now under her guns. Nostrum had more armament than just her broadsides. She had smaller weapons, defensive guns that could knock out missiles. I suspected it was these that Deitch was threatening to use on me now. We hadn't dared place the ship in the sights of the ground batteries before, but apparently Deitch was determined to stop me. "Fantastic!" I shouted, waving a hand at the ship, although I doubted she could see me. "We'll stand down, sir. All we wanted to do is hit the Volbites as they arrived in this big elevator."
"I don't believe you," she said. "You're stalling for time. McGill, if you don't move your troops away from that strategic asset in the next 30 seconds, I'm going to fire."
"Oh, now, Imperata, these troops came a long way."
"We'll honor them properly in the revival chamber. 20 seconds left, McGill. It's up to you."
I switched over to tactical chat.
"Keevy, are you ready?" I asked.
"No, sir. I don't have the charges set yet. We lost most of our stuff with the weaponeers. I'm chaining together grenades here."
"How long do you need?"
"About 5 minutes. Maybe 10.
I closed my eyes. There was no way I could stall Deitch that long.
"McGill?"
she shouted in my ear. Her voice seemed emotional when she spoke my name.
"I'm running a countdown. 10, 9.
"Troops," I shouted. "Move out, everyone away from the umbilical, including you, Keevy." They didn't hesitate. They fled in every direction, seeking whatever cover they could find. Only I remained, standing with my butt propped up against the undulating skin of the umbilical.
"Excellent," Deitch said. "My people tell me your platoon has scattered. You've avoided a well-deserved perming today, McGill."
I was barely listening to her, but I sensed I'd get more time if I kept her talking, so I tried to keep her on the line. "This was all a big misunderstanding, sir," I said. While I talked, I dug out my combat knife and began slashing a hole in the umbilical tube. The material was tough, but my molecularly aligned blade was insanely sharp. I managed to slash a slit, which was soon crossed by another cut. An X-shaped hole formed, and I began crawling inside. The umbilical was lightly pressurized to keep it from collapsing, and a gush of air came out. I crawled inside, feeling the rough fabric shiver and flap over my suit. "We were ordered to rush into enemy lines," I told Deitch. "Ordered to seek and destroy, to advance until the enemy was defeated. When we ran out of Volbites, we naturally pursued them right out onto the hull itself."
"I can almost believe that. You Varus types are like animals trained to fight in pits."
"That's right, sir. You just let us loose and we'll get rid of any—"
"McGill, what are you—"
Deitch interrupted, and the change in her tone left no doubt she was aware I wasn't huddled up on the hull with the rest of my troops.
"Damn you, man! You've left me no choice. Gunners, burn him down!"
I was inside the umbilical, edging my way around inside it. Knowing I only had seconds left, I lunged, hurling myself out into the void. For a few seconds, I found myself falling in the middle of the chute. Once away from the space complex, the gravity of Darkworld had begun to tug me downward.
Below, toward the planet, I could see the silver disk coming rapidly up the endless tube. If I didn't die soon, I'd be crushed for certain. But I didn't plan to last that long. Stuttering beams came crashing all around me at an angle, puncturing the umbilical fabric in 100 places. I could vaguely hear a ripping sound as the fabric was torn apart by 1,000 pencil-thin bolts from Nostrum. Deech and her gunners had doubtlessly locked onto my signal and were showering the area with rapid fire. A stream of bolts followed me down as I fell toward Dark World many kilometers below. A few of them slammed into my body and threw me into a spin. As a man who's been shot on many occasions, I knew right off I was dying. It seemed like one of my thighs had caught most of it. The rest of my leg below that, it was gone. I experienced shock and pain that was more like pressure and sickness than real agony. All of that was followed by the stinging sensation of the freezing, thin atmosphere, which invaded my suit like a splash of ice water. The cold wrapped me up in a frozen hand, and soon it sucked the very air from my lungs, replacing it with frost. My mind was still working well enough to understand I'd failed. I was spinning, dying, falling toward Dark World. The umbilical was all around me, a semi-transparent film that had somehow held together. There were holes, lots of holes, but it was still in one piece. Then, as my vision began to darken, I saw a change. The sun came out. Dark World loomed a moment later, surrounded by its purplish haze of atmosphere. It took me a second to realize the umbilical had torn loose, and it had begun to fall due to its own fantastic weight. I tried to whoop as I dropped toward the alien planet, one I'd never yet set foot upon, but there wasn't enough air left in my lungs to make a sound. Chapter 36. I died hard, and my corpse fell all the way down to Dark World. Fortunately, I lost consciousness before I burned up in that thick, hazy atmosphere. There was time to calculate that I'd probably permed myself. It had been a good way to go out, as a man like me measures such things. After all, if every single one of us is destined to be permed at some point, why not do it in the most dramatic fashion possible? But it wasn't to be. When I felt life stir in my mind and my limbs again, I was almost disappointed. "What now?" I managed to croak out. "What's that? He's talking?" said a male voice.
"He's a good grow, good enough anyway," a female answered. "Get him off my table."
My mind was slowly knitting together, and I squinted in the glare of the revival chamber trying to figure out what was going on. Usually after a stunt like the one I'd just pulled on Deech, I would be revived to stand trial. Today, though, there was a different vibe going on. The bio people looked stressed and tired. The floor was stained and even a little steamy. These were sure signs that they'd been running the machines night and day, churning out troops. That was normal in the wake of a big battle, but I got the impression from their intense, nearly exhausted behavior that we were in trouble.
"What's going on?" I asked.
"What's our status? Are we losing the platform?" They looked at me in surprise. The specialist turned to the orderly and glared at him. She had a mean look to her.
"I thought you said his numbers checked out. His mind isn't working right."
"It's working okay for him," he said defensively. "Check out his storage date. He's been in limbo for 2 weeks.
2 weeks,
she said, blinking. Then she frowned at me.
"Did your dog take a shit on somebody's lawn up there on Gold Deck, adjunct?"
Something like that, yeah. She nodded.
"Well, I don't want any part of that. Get to your unit. Someone will brief you there."
I agreed, deciding it was high time that I became agreeable. Maybe I'd gotten off easy, somehow. Making my way to my unit's module, I found it empty. Checking my tapper, I discovered there wasn't a soul aboard Nostrum who was part of Third Unit. Feeling uncertain as to what to do,
I began making quiet inquiries using my tapper. That could be dangerous if I'd been revived by mistake, but I felt I had to know the score. Graves was the first one I reached out to. After all, he'd more or less approved of my intended actions. The tapper rang and rang, but he didn't pick up. Finally, I noticed the message. Unavailable. That was strange. He'd been on Gold Deck, then on the space complex with me. If he was in either place now, he'd be available. Could he be dead? I wasn't sure. In rapid order, I tried Carlos, Keevy, Natasha, even Harris. I came up with nothing. Worried, I took a quick shower, dressed in fatigues, and headed up to Gold Deck. Now, a thinking person might believe waltzing onto Gold Deck was madness on my part. To be honest, part of me was thinking the same thing. But someone up there must have released the hold on my revive. Someone had to know what the score was. So I took the gamble. I got to the elevator lobby and was waiting to catch a lift to Gold Deck when a small hand tapped on my back. I whirled around expecting foul play, but the face that greeted me was familiar. She was a petite, thin woman with sharp features. She was cute enough when she smiled, and a few years ago we'd had a thing going on. It was none other than Centurion Evelyn Thompson, a bio officer from Blue Deck. She backed up a step when I whirled around on her, but then she relaxed when I smiled in recognition. "Sorry," I said. "I'm a little jumpy after spending 2 weeks on ice."
"Right," she said. "You can relax. I'm the one who shuffled the queue to get you back into the game."
"Really? Thanks, but can you tell me what's going on?" She looked around with furtive eyes.
"Not here. Follow me."
Evelyn was a special case. She worked for Turov most of the time, but she didn't always like her job. Most recently, she'd been restored to the rank of Centurion by Turov, which to my mind meant she was locked in like an indentured servant. When Evelyn and I had enjoyed our affair, I figured it hadn't really harmed either of us. But still, we weren't really on the same side. It occurred to me as I followed her tight little behind down a side passage that Evelyn fit the profile of various women I tended to get involved with down to a T. She blew hot and cold, seemingly at random, and in the past we'd both killed each other at one point or another. Why such females attracted me was a mystery I figured I'd never solve. I said, "where are we going?" She glanced over her shoulder in surprise.
"No trust? Not even on a day like today?"
"Well, sorry." I soon figured out she was leading me to her private quarters. Things were looking up from my point of view. After she let me in, I stretched out on her couch. "I do have some fine memories of this couch," I told her.
Don't go there."
"What? Why not? You aren't still upset about our past, are you?" She shrugged and didn't meet my eye. That told me she was still uncomfortable about it. The thing was, Evelyn had been playing me for a dupe. She'd spied on me, loved me, then spied on me some more. When I'd finally figured out what she was doing, she dumped me, apologizing briefly before running off into the night.
"James, can we forget about our past? Things are urgent."
"I'm sure they are," I said. "People don't just unperm old McGill for nothing. But you know, you kind of hurt my feelings a few summers back."
"Look, I told you I was sorry about that. What else can I do?"
Thinking of several pleasant possibilities, I shrugged. Fortunately, I was smart enough not to suggest anything out loud. "All right," I said. "Apology accepted for now. What do you want to tell me? By the way, have you got a beer or something? My mouth always tastes awful after a revive." She gave me a beer, and she sipped a can of wine herself. She stared at me for a moment before she began talking rapidly.
"Here's the deal. Your unit has been deployed on Dark World. Most of our Legion was deployed down there over a week ago."
I sat up and slammed down my beer can. It was empty already. "We invaded Dark World? Hot damn!" Evelyn snorted and shook her head, smiling,
Same old James. You like to fight, don't you?
I love smashing bugs like these Volbites. So have we pushed their garrison troops back? Have we flushed them all out of their holes down there and squished them by the thousands?
She looked down and licked her lips before answering. This planet isn't garrisoned by the Volbites, James. We've discovered it's their homeworld.
That was a stunner. All of a sudden, I understood why they'd been coming at us in what seemed like endless waves. They were fighting for their home planet.
Uh-oh, I said, thinking about it. That's not good. No, it's not. After we kicked them off this orbital platform, Deitch ordered Legion Varus to drop on the planet itself. The fighting down there has been fierce.
I was frowning now, not liking the idea of having missed all the action.
Why couldn't they have revived me and thrown me into battle with my troops? They just decided to do so last night. An order went out saying all holds on revivals were off, and your name was cleared immediately. I popped you up to the top of the queue this morning, and here we are.
Jumping off her couch, I approached her, and she took a cautionary step back.
You've got to get me down there, girl. I need to join my unit if they're in trouble.
My hand clasped her elbow, and she looked a little scared.
I understand how you feel, she said. But it's a bit more complicated than that. Your cohort has been captured.
All of them?
Yes.
Now I understood why she looked worried. She hadn't told me the really bad stuff before, and now that she had, she was concerned about how I'd react. I let go of her, and she breathed more easily.
Look, she said. I know this sucks. I know this is unfair. But I'm going to lay it out for you. Deitch still wants you dead. She's up on Gold Deck, busy with disasters, and she doesn't know you've been revived. It probably slipped her mind when she released everyone who was held up in the queue that the order would include you.
Frowning, I gave her my full attention. But the Blue Deck people would know the difference. They'd check with the brass before okaying my revival. Who authorized this, then? Turov, right?
Yeah, Evelyn said. She told me to do it. In case someone noticed I'd altered the cues, I decided not to be there when you came out.
You chickened, I said, nodding.
I took precautions, she amended,
and I let her get away with it. How did it happen, the capture, I mean? For Legionnaires, being captured on an alien world was just about the worst imaginable fate. Legally, Earth couldn't revive troops who weren't confirmed dead. Being captured and disappearing meant you were permed. No revive. No possibility of freedom either if you did somehow survive. Aliens typically made poor hosts.
They were invading a hive. That's what's down there on Dark World, big hives full of Volbites. It turns out they live kind of like ants or termites.
Great, I said. So all of them are gone? My whole unit?
She squirmed. More like your whole cohort.
My heart sank, and it was feeling pretty low already.
Even Graves?
Yes.
Well,
what the hell can I do about that? Reviving me was thoughtful, but I don't...
We're supposed to do something extreme.
Who's we?
Me and you. Mostly you. I'm supposed to help.
She looked scared, and I looked baffled for a few seconds. Then I caught on. Turov wants us to fix this somehow? Evelyn nodded.
But how can we...
I began, then I thought I had the answer.
You don't mean the broadsides, do you? That would be extreme. You'd really go so far for Turov? She gave me my rank back, James. Without Turov, I'll be busted back down to specialist.
Yeah, I get that, but this is a whole new level of crazy for you.
She said you could do it. She said you'd want to do it.
Feeling a little overwhelmed, I paced her quarters, rubbing at my own shoulders and face. If everyone I knew was down there on Dark World, as good as permed, using the broadsides was one sure way to get them out of purgatory. A single salvo from those big guns, 16 shells screaming down with fusion warheads, That would wipe out any nest of bugs that had captured my people. Certified death for all, and a revival for all those captured. I'm not magic, I told her. I can't just storm the fire control center and operate the guns solo. Evelyn reached into her shirt and fished between her breasts for a second. I watched this with my eyebrows raised high. Finally, she pulled out something that looked like a seashell.
Oh, I said. The key.
You know what this thing is? She asked. You know how to use it?
I sure do, I said, taking it from her hands. It was warm to the touch, and I looked at it thoughtfully.
Good, she said, sighing in relief. That's all I can do to help. Take it, and do your worst.
I reached out a hand and I planted it on her shoulder. I lifted the key up and held it between us. This will get us inside, I said. But I still need help. You're in this to the end, right? Evelyn looked scared again.
What more can I do?
You can talk our way past security, for one thing. Once we're there, you can pull levers. I'll tell you which ones. They changed things aboard Nostrum. The interface controlling the broadsides has fail-safes now.
How do you know that?
I shrugged. Idle curiosity can get a man into all kinds of trouble. Anyway, I'll need help working the fire control stations. It'll take at least two people to pull this off.
Damn it, she said softly. I guess I'm in.
Chapter 37 On the way up to Gold Deck, I let Evelyn do all the talking and all the checking in. She was a centurion, meaning she outranked me. I played the part of the big, dumb sidekick. To add authenticity to the ruse, I had her stop by Blue Deck, which was situated immediately below Gold Deck. We rummaged in the storage closet, and I was soon dressed in the blue coveralls of an orderly. Hulking behind her, I marched along the passages. We took the elevator to the top. The fire control center was in the aft region of Gold Deck on Nostrum, as Earth was now licensed to build and operate her own warships. In the past, transports like this maintained a Skrull crew on a flight deck and a separate human crew on a gunnery deck to handle the broadsides. This had been necessary for legal reasons. Humans had been approved to fight battles, and the Skrull had been approved to fly starships. A decade ago, it had been illegal for humans to fly a ship or for Skrull to fire broadsides. That was a typical bureaucratic setup in the Empire. It was a goofy way to run a fleet. So Earth had performed some redesigns on ships like Nostrum once we were no longer under such severe rules of engagement from the Empire. Showing the red crest of her rank every time she was challenged, Evelyn made rapid progress toward our goal. But we were stopped cold when we approached the fire control center.
State your business, Centurion, a deck crewman demanded.
There's been an accident, she lied. I'm here to confirm the status of the injured.
The crewman frowned in confusion. It wasn't uncommon for bio people to perform such inspections. They had the task of confirming who was alive or dead, allowing revivals. They also decided who among the injured needed to be finished off and recycled.
There's just one problem, he said, checking his tapper.
I've got no reports of any accidents.
James,
Evelyn said, crossing her arms.
Oh, right. You see, Vet, the trouble is...
I walked toward him as I talked, and he frowned up at me. I lifted the tapper on my arm so he could see it.
You see this message right here? I asked him.
I don't see...
He crumpled after I sucker-punched him repeatedly.
Evelyn bent to check his vitals. She sucked air between her teeth.
Did you have to hit him so hard? He'll have to be recycled.
Come on, let's keep moving.
We reached the fire control station moments later. The Galactic Key bypassed the locks, and there was no one on duty. The place was deserted.
Turov arranged this part, Evelyn said. I can't believe we're really up here doing this.
I walked past her and began operating the equipment. The fire control system was Imperial standard, and I'd operated such a station before. The only difference was the triggering mechanism. Instead of a standard touch interface, two big metal triggers stood out on the console, each shrouded in a handguard of black. The triggers reminded me of pump handles at a tram fueling station. On the plus side, the observation ports gave us a fine view. The purplish disk of Dark World glowed below. Rapidly, I touched the galactic key to the various control panels overriding their security. They all logged us in as super users. There were no more checks, no more passwords. We were in control of everything. "Here," I told Evelyn, "punch in the coordinates of the hive Turov gave you." She did so, and I watched her, feeling a little suspicious. But the coordinates matched the ones she'd specified, and they made sense. The big guns outside swung in unison and locked on the target, aiming down at the equatorial region of the planet. Once locked, they slowly began to track, as the world spun. "We've got to fire soon," I said, "or we'll be forced to wait until the planet spins all the way around again." Evelyn nodded, and she moved to her firing station. Two people had to pull the triggers at once to get the big guns to fire. It was a last-ditch security measure that I didn't know how to circumvent. The triggers themselves were large metal things you squeezed together inside their protective guards. "I'm putting up the blast shields," I said. "The broadsides won't fire unless we do." Huge protective clam shells rolled up and obscured all sight of the planet below. "All right," I said. "That's it. On three, we pull these triggers. One, two."
"James,"
Evelyn said in a voice I rarely heard from her. She sounded weak, frightened, out of her element.
"I can't do it."
"Sure you can. Just give it a firm yank. Ready?"
"No. I mean, I can't just kill a million aliens. I can't do something like that without having the approval of our mission commander."
"Deech? She doesn't want any part of this."
"I know. I...
"Listen," I said. "This is a bad time to get cold feet. Someone's bound to find us in here soon. Just do it." She looked freaked out. She stared at her hand, and I thought for a second she'd pull the trigger. Mine was already half-squeezed. But she didn't. She removed her hand from the trigger guard and shook her head.
"I can't do it. I'm not like you. I can't do it. Not for your friends. Not for Galena."
Before I could argue with her any further, a stern voice spoke from the doorway.
"Well, well, well," Imperata Deech said. "What do we have here? Two agents of Varys, caught in the act."
A trio of guards stood at her back. My mouth hung open for a moment, as did Evelyn's. But I recovered first. "Hello there, Imperata," I said in a cheery tone. "We just discovered an awful security oversight. No one should be allowed into this chamber without proper credentials. If this had been anything other than a test..."
"Shut up, McGill," Deech said.
She advanced into the chamber warily. Her eyes were on Evelyn, however, rather than me.
"You didn't have the guts to pull the trigger, did you?"
she asked the Centurion. Evelyn didn't answer. Her eyes were as big around as saucers. She slowly raised her hands above her head.
"Damn you, girl," Deech said. "Don't surrender. Fire those guns. Now!"
Bewildered, Evelyn shook her head in confusion.
"You want us to fire?"
she asked. Deech rolled her eyes.
"Of course. How do you think you got in here? Did you really believe this chamber is ever deserted? There's a battle going on down below."
When I thought that over, the situation did seem unlikely.
"Now," Deech said, "are you going to fire those damned guns or not?"
Evelyn shook her head. Her mouth set itself in a tight line.
"Fine."
Deech spat out the word. She smoothly drew her sidearm and shot Evelyn repeatedly. On reflex, I reached for my own gun, but the guards were covering me.
"Now, McGill," Deech asked me, "are you in a more cooperative mood?"
As she talked, Deech grabbed Evelyn's dead hand, shoved it into the firing stirrup, and forced the bloody fingers to close around the trigger. Deech looked at me expectantly.
"Well?
Is my cohort really down there, trapped in that hive?"
They are. We lost contact with them yesterday. They were overwhelmed deep inside the nest.
I nodded. Just tell me one more thing. Why the hell are you doing this?
You're mistaken,
Deitch said.
The record will clearly show that a squad of Varus renegades perpetrated this crime under orders from Turov.
I got it then. It was like the heavens above had opened and spilled golden wisdom into my benighted face.
Deitch was actually trying to pull a move. That was unheard-of behavior
for her.
She was trying to get Turov blamed for this whole disaster instead of herself. That's why she'd allowed things to go so far.
Deitch followed my shifting expressions, and she knew I'd figured it out. She shrugged, perhaps feeling a twinge of shame.
This business with the broadsides wasn't my idea originally. It was Turov's, she said. But after I found out about it, I thought it over, and I came to the surprising conclusion that Turov was correct. We need to strike the planet directly. It's the only way to win this campaign.
Let's see if I've got this straight, I said. You liked her idea, but you didn't want to take the blame for genocide? So, up until now, you've been helping us slip by?
Up until now, I've done nothing but observe your criminal behavior. I hadn't planned to do anything at all except arrest you two when it was over. But then Centurion Thompson chickened at the last step. A pity.
Tell me one thing. Why are you convinced this is the only way to proceed?
It isn't. Assaulting the nests on the ground is the approved approach. Engaging in genocidal attacks is unacceptable for Earth, even for Varus.
I wasn't so sure about that, as I'd participated in various actions that were on an equivalent plane of evil. Often I'd tried to stop them with mixed results. But Deitch wasn't really from Varus. She had the high-minded ideals of the Iron Eagles stuck in her head. Why not just revive my legion and assault another nest? She squirmed a little.
Right now, Varus is mostly permed. We can't legally revive those soldiers, not unless we know they're dead.
Ah, I said, nodding my head. You'd deploy Varus again, not your precious Eagles. But you can't because they're on hold for a revival. The only other thing you can do is ask Earth for more troops.
Now you grasp the situation. Are we doing this or not?
I looked at her intently for a moment. At last I nodded. How could I refuse? Without this effort, Kiwi, Natasha, Carlos, Graves, they were all gone. All right, I said. Let's do it.
Deitch looked at me for a moment longer. Then nodded. On my mark, she said. One, two, mark.
Our eyes were locked as she counted down, and they stayed locked as we both squeezed the big, heavy triggers. The massive guns spoke, and the whole ship bucked with the unleashed power. 16 shells went screaming down toward Dark World. The war between Earth and Rigel had escalated again. There was only one advantage I had in this grim situation. I'd fired broadsides before, and none of these Eagles had ever done so. Because of my prior experiences, I knew one critical thing. The main guns aboard a starship kick like a rabid mule. Back in Georgia Sector, on Earth, I'd fired more than my share of buckshot, but the kick of a 12-gauge was nothing compared to the awesome power of 16 fusion cannons going off under your boots in unison. Unlike Deitch and her guards, I braced myself for this vicious jolt in the ass. Caught by surprise, Deitch's chin came down and slammed into the steel guard covering the trigger. She looked stunned, and her blood flowed over the housing. The three guards had been standing around aimlessly. For the most part, they'd been directing their rifles at me and frowning at the instrumentation. When the kick came, their knees buckled, and they were thrown to the deck. One of them stopped moving, knocked out cold. This was the third time I'd been involved in the firing of broadsides. Unlike the ground pounders, I'd set myself and I rode it out. My knees bent, but they didn't buckle. Climbing back to their feet, cursing and confused, the guards were easy targets. One of them caught a bolt from my pistol before the second managed to return fire. He got me in the side, but I put him down a split second later. Deitch was stunned, but she was still in the game. She clawed out her own weapon a moment later. We stood there, aiming our pistols at one another.
"You savage!"
she called out. "Me?" I asked. "You're the genocidal maniac. Take a look." So saying, I struck a big green button. The blast shields rolled away again, revealing the purple disk of Dusk World below us.
"Millions are about to die, sir."
16 streaks were still on their way down. We could see them clearly, arcing gently as they plunged through the upper atmosphere. They left white, billowing trails of vapor behind them as they fell.
"Won't we be blinded on impact?"
Deitch said, unable to tear her eyes away from the scene. "I don't think so. Not at this range." Neither of us spoke for the next 20 or so seconds. Finally, a ripple of flashes went off far below. Deitch threw her hands over her eyes, squinting and pulling her lips back from her teeth. I could have shot her then, but I didn't. Instead, I stepped close. I put my gun to her temple and pushed hers down. She jerked the trigger, but the bolt scored the deck instead of my body, drawing a smoking line of gouged-up molten metal.
"You're a treacherous dog," Deitch said to me. "You can kill me now, but I'll be revived. I'll be the one who watches you get permed."
Ignoring her threats, I took her hand, and I pulled off her glove. She looked confused, but she didn't struggle much. Using her hand, I shoved it into the trigger guard. She finally figured out what I was doing then, and she tried to pull her hand back, but she was quickly overpowered. I forced her hand to close over the metal squeeze handles that formed the trigger.
"What are you doing?"
she demanded. "Oh, I think you know," I said. "You turned off the cameras in here, didn't you?" Her wide eyes answered me despite the fact she stayed silent. "That's what I thought," I told her. "But these triggers measure DNA. I just want to make sure you share in the credit for this bombardment." As I was using both my hands to force her to touch the trigger, making sure it had enough time to scan her, I was watching her other hand. She managed to get her pistol up against my gut, and she shot me. I fell back. I'm a tough man, but I know when the game's about over. I could have killed Deitch anyway, as I still had my weapon, but I didn't see the point. Instead, I rolled over onto my belly, which was now a tangled, smoldering mess that hung out over my belt. That mass was kind of hot to the touch, a weird sensation. Taking the galactic key, I slipped it into Evelyn's back pocket.
"Stay down, you beast!"
Deitch shouted, and she shot me again in the back this time.
"Oh, shit! That one hurt," I told her.
I got to my knees again anyway, and I heard her labored breathing as she stood over me.
"Die! Damn you!"
she hissed out.
"Losing your nerve, Imperata?"
Slowly, I levered myself back up and stood in front of her. I was swaying and leaning on the console, but I was on my feet. I looked her in the eyes, daring her to finish me off. She shot me in the face. That did the trick. I flopped down, deader than yesterday. Chapter 38. My next revival started off good.
"McGill? Adjunct? Can you hear me, James?"
The voice was feminine, vaguely familiar. My eyes fluttered open. I coughed up slime. When I could answer, I rolled onto my side and wheezed.
"Evelyn, that's right," she said in relief. "He looks good. It will have to do."
Another figure shadowed me. "McGill?" Graves asked. "Did you participate in the broadside strike on Dark World?" Despite my bleary state of mind, I was immediately on guard. Usually, Graves was a man I could count on for help, but he didn't like junior officers taking drastic action,
That meant we didn't always see eye to eye.
What strike was that, sir?
I asked, deciding to go with my tried-and-true appeal to ignorance.
That's what I thought, he said.
Sitting up with an effort, I managed to